If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hi, Brenda.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm so glad that we could have you in the studio today because we were just saying off camera, like when we first met and we were learning a little bit more about your personal story, I was like, oh, this is like such a great story that I think should be told more. So fast forward and we have you now in the studio today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, it's our pleasure. Why don't we start off, if you could just introduce yourself, your role with AFC, and also what is ultimately kind of your thesis and kind of your perspective on the work that you're doing?
Sure. So I'm Brenda Ha, born and raised in Toronto, Ontario. My parents immigrated here from South Korea, actually through Germany, in the late 60s. And I have two siblings, an older sister and older brother. Was born and raised in North Toronto. Loved this city. I've had such a terrific experience as a first-gen Korean-Canadian, a proud Korean-Canadian. Went to university here in Kingston, Ontario, Queen's University, and then spent 2 years in Boston, came back to Toronto, had a career in banking, and then started an entrepreneurial journey. And this opportunity with AFC Toronto came up, and I guess here we are, fast forward to 2025. It's been 2 years in the making with AFC Toronto. As you know, we launched in April with our first game at BMO Field, and here we are off to the races.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And so what I thought was really interesting about our initial pre-talk was like, you're not like a former pro athlete. You're not like a Jeff Bezos, like kind of like this kind of billionaire status, and yet you're still the co-owner of a professional soccer team. What made you say, yeah, I'm going to do this? Mm-hmm. What was kind of that launchpad moment for you?
Well, I'm a proud Torontonian and soccer mom, and that's really how this began. Is my son started playing recreationally when he was 8, and then got really competitive and joined OPDL, which is the Ontario Player Development League in Ontario. So I from being a soccer mom, I was like, well, I'm here all the time, you know, doing soccer things, organizing, and there's some work at the club that I think I can be helpful with. So I put my hand up. I joined the board of the North Toronto Nitros, North Toronto Soccer Club. And it was actually 2022 when Diana Matheson and Christine Sinclair went on CBC in November. And they basically said, you know, it's time that Canada had a domestic league. We are one of very few nations that compete on an international scale and actually really good at soccer in professional women leagues, but we don't have our own domestic league, so we're going to change that. So after that, the president of the North Toronto Soccer Club at the time, Helena Rukin, and Billy Wilson, the executive director of the club at the time, put their heads together and decided to put together a bid for the Toronto franchise. So at one of the board meetings at the end, Helena just said pretty casually to the team, and so Billy and I are doing this, and if anybody around this table would like to get involved, let me know. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So I went home to my husband and I said, oh, and at the end of the board meeting, Helena said to the group, we're doing this, we're launching this bid for the Toronto franchise of what was then Project 8. If anyone wants to get involved, let me know. And so anyway, I went out about my, you know, we were doing dinner at the time and my husband was like, wait, did you say something? Did you say you want to get involved? And I was like, no, I just thought it was really cool and interesting. What a great idea, and good for them. And he said, why didn't you raise your hand? Why didn't you say, let's talk about it? And Lance, I think at that point, you know, up until then, I thought about those kinds of opportunities as opportunities for other people. Mm. You know, not for people like me, not someone who came from immigrant parents. It was more for those others that were already in the sport or in the business of sports, in the industry, in the corner office. So his nudge really made me think about, you know, well, who are these opportunities for, you know, and what is the mission of Project Aid, and why would I get involved? So we talked a lot about the reason, you know, and the intention and the mission of what now has become AFC Toronto's mission, which is really to build community and promote gender equity, you know, and for a long, long time, there's been a real inequity in sports, maybe in business, you know, I would say in having, you know, women are 50% of the population, yet growing up, you and I didn't see women playing professionally. You know, it was men on the ice. It was men throwing the football around. It was men in the corner offices also, might I add. So we had a real good conversation about what it meant, you know, what having a professional women's team in a professional women's league in Canada would be, what the impact would be on young girls, on young women, and not just women, on men too. You know, that when our kids grow up, they would not see gender inequity. You know, that they would feel like women playing professionally was normal. Usual. Yeah. You know, like what it's supposed to be. So at the end of the day, we called Helena and we said, we'd like to talk with you about what this bid would look like and how we can get involved. Mm. And, you know, 3 months later, we had a team of seven, our co-founding team, put our heads together around a business plan and a strategic plan, and raising funds to invest in what is now AFC Toronto.
That's super exciting.
You know, what's really exciting about that opportunity is that it was grassroots.
Yeah.
And like you say, we aren't multi-billionaires. Like we're regular people who love soccer and who want to see us all raise the bar around promoting young girls and young women to have these opportunities and to allow them to dream big and to see this pathway that we created so that they feel like they can also perform at that level and not have to stop playing at high school or at university, that there is a career path for them now if they choose.
And there's a groundswell within the community to lift up this kind of shared through line and purpose.
100%. And we all keep on saying, like, it's not just a moment in time. It's now a movement.
Yeah.
I mean, with the PWHL last year, 2 years ago launching, I'm expanding this year, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
With us launching this year, the Northern Super League, and with the WNBA coming next year. I mean, and they've already gotten huge sponsors, you know, and Teresa Resch is doing an incredible job building up the momentum around her team and that franchise. So it's been exciting. And what I will say is I think it's so beautiful to see women helping each other. You know, we leaned a lot on the PWHL as we were building and, you know, kind of net new uncharted territory from the ground up. They had already gone through the process and they had a year under their belt. So they were so helpful and just, you know, in offering their expertise and their guidance, their experience. And as such, you know, with the WNBA, we're talking with them about the things that we're doing. So there's a real sisterhood.
Yeah,
you know,
it's nice to hear.
It is. And even with groups like MLSE, they're really helpful too. So it's a collective, you know, and it's really the beauty around community, I think, and sport and how unifying it is. Not, you know, of course, the play and the level of play is intense, and we're building and we're learning every day around that as well. But it's also all the work that goes on behind the scenes that you don't see in broadcast. For example, in setting up a match, you know, there's a whole team with a lot of hands involved in the lead up. There's, mm-hmm. you know, 4 to 6 hours before in the prepping to transform our stadium, which is at York Lions Stadium this year, to become AFC's home.
Yeah.
AFC Toronto's home. And then there's a breakdown, you know, after the match. There's 2 or 3 hours where same hands have to pull it all,
right.
you know, back. And it's a collaborative effort, for
it's
sure.
It's a full run of show that you're building out.
It
I
is.
Understand that completely. That's a lot of work.
For sure. But it's been really a pleasure and a delight to see how many people want to volunteer and just raise their hand and say, how can I help?
Mm. It's also really... heartening to hear, because I feel like traditionally or historically, you know, for underrepresented groups, minority groups, that only already get the sliver of like a larger pie, and people, you know, there hasn't always been the culture of knowledge and resource sharing and keeping your cards close because you're fighting for like crumbs. Where I feel like the dialogue has shifted and the sentiment has shifted, especially with all of these great, you know, opportunities that have come up within the women's sports world, there is an embracing of collaboration, and like if we all work together, it's a net positive for the overall culture, and that is a net positive for business opportunities, and everyone's able to kind of take part in the lion's share versus trying to fight for the crumbs, you know?
100%. And you know, I think another benefit of creating this league, each club has opportunities, not just on the pitch, but in the front office. Mm. I heard a stat, I think it was Diana that said it, Diana Matheson, around this league creating 300 net new jobs. And that's, you know, I mean, that's amazing for the economy as well.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, I feel like just in the last year or so, there have been so many amazing conversations with business owners, big enterprise as well as small business owners, that see the benefit of a team like AFC Toronto coming, and they want a partner, and that's incredible, and we welcome that. Mm-hmm. Desjardins is our front of jersey sponsor, and they've been amazing in their support of women, of our team, of our league. It's been a really terrific partnership. We're so grateful for them.
That's yeah, just to see the outpouring of support from the community, and then sustaining that momentum, sustaining that energy, and to your point, making sure that it's kind of rooted in like not a moment but like a movement, and 100%. This needs to be a long-term kind of story that is being told.
For sure. I think that's I like the word you use, story. There's so much storytelling that happens in these vignettes of, you know, the players and how they got here, our leadership group and how we got here, and the grassroots teams that are coming, you know, and watching these games and being flag bearers and holding the hands of their role models in the players. Like, it's just been amazing and beautiful stories, one after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's got one. You talk to any supporter that comes to watch a match, and one, I think they're surprised at how engaged they are in the experience.
Right.
You know, on the field, but as well as around the field, the game day experience. Recently, we had Korea Night, and it was a big eye-opener for me. So I was born here. I think you were born here in Canada as well.
Yeah.
And I grew up in, I would say, an area where there were visible minorities around, but I was, you know, maybe one of a handful in my elementary school. I grew up and I went to Queens, and at that time, you know, I would say, again, there were a handful of visible minorities, but not a lot. So I didn't have a lot of exposure to, you know, a Korean community group, except through church.
Mm-hmm.
So when Hong Hye-ji was brought on to our roster in early 2025, I really wanted to promote how amazing I thought that was, how courageous and brave I think it's for any player to come to a different country where you don't know the language very well, and the culture is totally different.
Yeah.
So I really leaned into my Korean roots, and I reached out to some Korean organizations. It really was an eye opener for me.
Yeah.
And I was really grateful for how they leaned into. So at Korea Night, we had so many Korean organizations come out, Korean Sport Organization of Canada. We had the KCCA, Korean Canadian Cultural Association, the Korean Canadian Cultural Embassy, the Korean Canadian Culture Center in Ottawa. Right. Reached out to me and asked if Gonya, a group from Korea, could perform.
So cool.
Amazing. And they were incredible. They did our pre and halftime show as well as the anthem. So it really did open my eyes to all the organizations that are here in Toronto, in Ontario, in Canada. And, you know, I thought if you just open the door, you know, and you peek your head in, they come out. They come out. And so Korea Night was a huge success. And it was really beautiful to see not just, first gen immigrants who came to Canada there, but the next generation, you know, the generation that are coming up after us. And I hope that through our efforts and through the impact that we're having with AFC Toronto, that all these groups come out to support not just, you know, again, the play on the field, which is incredible, but the community that we're building, which is unifying, you know, as a society, as a sport, as Korean Canadians, but all heritages that live in Toronto. Like we are, our team, I think, is a true reflection of the city of Toronto, of the multiculturalism of the province and of Canada.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, to your point, like, not just about what happens on the soccer pitch, it's about everything that surrounds it and all the stories and how people got to that soccer pitch or got to the stadium and how people consume sports in their living rooms. I remember, in terms of soccer, when South Korea went to the semifinals, maybe, in the World Cup years ago. And that was something that really brought, like, everyone in the household. Like, I'm talking about, like, all extended families. Everyone was wearing, what was his name? An Jung-hwan, his uniform and everything. And, like, I was, like, definitely, like, back then, like, I was, like, I did not really care for soccer that much. But the fact that you could see, we could see ourselves on the screens and then like that, you know, a level of success and our kind of like our kind of motherland country doing so well. I mean, it was just something that was just more than just the sport itself for someone that was not that interested in sport at that time.
Right. For sure. You know? National pride, you know, pride of, also women who are doing it for themselves.
Yeah.
So we have Hong Hye-ji on AFC Toronto, and then there are also two Korean players on Ottawa Rapid.
Yeah.
So this game, Korea Night, was on July 10th on purpose because all those three Korean players are representing the Northern Super League in such an amazing way and telling the story of international success here in Canada and us welcoming, you know, those players to our team, to our city, to our province, to our country.
What do you think that experience was like for the players?
I think it's a mix of emotions. You know, I know that there's a lot of love for our players, you know, and we're really trying to support them here while they're not at home, you know, while they're away from their families, away from everything they know. I think nights like Korea Night are helpful in terms of them knowing that we're there to support them and trying to engage as a community and wrap our arms around them. And then, you know, they're earning their spot and they're proving it on the pitch. So it's competitive.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Canada is a very welcoming country because of the way in which, you know, we've basically lived the last 50 years in welcoming immigrants and creating little beautiful pockets of places like Koreatown, which is just down the way. So
just around the corner, I know.
That's right. So it's, there are Canadians here that are also not living at home, you know, that Toronto is not home for them. Mm. So we're really trying to make it a welcoming environment for them where we have a staff member in charge of player care. and really trying to make sure that they are taken care of as well and elevated, their experience elevated at the professional level.
Yeah, yeah, that's great to hear. Switching the focus to you, back to you in terms of like your journey as an owner, did you ever have any moments where you felt kind of that sense of like imposter syndrome as someone that did not have kind of like a background in sport? Or, you know, when people underestimated your role because you didn't necessarily fit the typical background or look of what a sports team owner kind of looks like?
I didn't. I used to feel imposter syndrome younger, in my younger years. The expression, you fake it till you make it. I've basically lived my life trying to do the best I can, be the best I can. I've worked at the Bank of Montreal for 10 years, and my role was in IT. I graduated with a commerce degree. I was not a coder. I was not, I didn't know mainframe, or COBOL, which were the languages at the time. But what I did know was how to work with people, how to relate to people, and really how to harness the best out of people. So I looked at my job as a people person, a people manager. I was the account manager at the time for our line of business. So I've taken that sort of that perspective, and I surround myself with the best in the business at what they do. So I would surround myself with the best coders, hire the best relationship managers. And I think in the same way with AFC Toronto, we are hiring the best. We're looking for the best staff members. We're looking obviously for the best athletes, the best players. We're also looking for amazing volunteers who have experience and want to come out. At the beginning, we didn't know a lot about a lot of things, but you know what? You seek it out.
Yeah.
You be resourceful. You find it. And I think in any career, in any domain, that's what a successful person does.
Yeah.
Is if they don't know, they go and find it.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
There you go.
That
exactly.
is the entrepreneurial philosophy. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And so we learn every day. And for sure, we make mistakes every day. Mm-hmm. But we are a lean and mighty team. And it's taken a lot of smart people to work with terrific partners who are willing to be flexible and learn along the way with us.
Mm.
It's really been that kind of team, those kinds of partnerships with our sponsors and that kind of league.
Yeah.
And, in a year and a half, we launched a league from scratch.
Which is incredible.
It's
a no small undertaking.
No small undertaking. And it's been a challenge and a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really locked hands with each other, and the other teams have been incredible. This only works when you partner closely and well with other teams that are trying to make this league work.
Yeah.
And I think by all accounts, we're doing really well in year number one, and a lot of learnings, that we'll take into year two and three and four, and on and on.
Yeah. So what is a typical day or week look like for someone in your role at the AFC Toronto? Like, I imagine it's probably different every week, but how do you see yourself in your role? How involved are you and hands-on are you in certain aspects, and how not are you in other aspects?
Mm-hmm. So I'm a co-founder, one of seven. There are other co-founders that did take on full-time roles.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is not a full-time role. I'm on the board of the club. So I would say, day-to-day, for year number one, it's been a real push, for the lead-up to each match. There's so much work that goes on behind the scenes. I can tell you from the standpoint of the management team, they are working day in, day out with partners, with sponsors, with vendors, with our home team, our home stadium, York Lions. They're pushing the limits on how many, how much you can do in one day. the setup to a match, as I mentioned, is incredible. We've really leaned on people also that know, that have experience in this kind of work. So It's been busy. And I would say no day is the same for the full-time staff. And they travel as well. So the team has been traveling. There are a few on the full-time roster that travel with the team, the full-time management team. So it's the kind of role, you know, the season is busy and it's full. And there's not a lot of time to sort of look up. And, you know, it's a lot of detailed work. Mm-hmm. So we're taking it game by game. Hopefully in a year's time, while we have learned a lot, you know, there'll be more sort of lead up time to each game. And you know, Korea night happened in the span of 2 weeks. So it was a lot of phone calling to people within the community to try to get others to come out mm-hmm. and support. It's been busy, but a lot of fun. And it's been encouraging to see how much the city is behind and backing the new league.
Mm. What's been the most difficult but rewarding lesson that you've had to learn in your experience so far?
Mm-hmm. I think there's, you know, given the amount of what there is to do in the city, given how busy this city is, there are a lot of competing events and priorities. It's been really rewarding to see teams, whole teams, come out and support the team on match days and in activations, you know, and even during training in the lead up to the season. I guess with the competing priorities, you know, I'd love to go to every cultural event in the city. It's just not possible. And we understand that too, that on a night where there might be a Blue Jays game and a TFC game and one of our matches and the CNE is about to start, there's a lot to do in the city.
Yeah.
So the impact is that not everybody can come to our matches all the time. But what's been rewarding is we've had a lot of support from the teams like the Blue Jays. One of our players went in throughout the first pitch of the season. So there's been a lot of engagement across the other domains, you know, the other sports teams, the other cultural events in the city. And that's been rewarding.
Yeah. I love that. You know, we kind of touched on this in terms of just this groundswell of like women's sports, especially in Canada and Toronto too, specifically. Like the space is just seems like it's exploding in real time, where you have, you know, things like viewership, stadium like seats being filled, merch. That's a huge part of the culture part as well. What do you think is driving the overall momentum around the culture and the excitement around women's sports right now?
I love that question. I think, you know, a lot of this is about the future, you know, and the future generations. Really, we are trying to create a pathway for girls and young women to dream the impossible. The mm-hmm. impossible becomes possible because we've opened up this door and created this pathway for that athlete that is really gunning hard for, you know, the next step. The D1 or going, you know, in the past going to Europe or Asia to play, to continue to play professionally while they still can.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been really special. You know, the stories around each of these players and how they got here and some to make, being away from home, you know, it can be challenging. Those stories, I think, are what this team is made of. You know, and the dreams of girls and young women to be able to feel like the next step is possible to play professionally. That's why we rep the merch. You know, that is what the merch means. It's not just a piece of clothing. It's actually the dream.
Yeah.
You know, and wearing that and feeling like anything is possible.
Mm.
And it's really, you know, it transcends sports. Like anything you can dream is possible because look what just happened.
Yeah.
You know, we launched professional hockey. We launched professional soccer. We are going to launch professional basketball in the city. Like, the sky's the limit. And now we, you know, the next step is having others dream that they can be in the front office of a professional women's soccer team if they want.
Yeah.
You know, part of the reason why I want to continue to amplify this team and this message, Lance, is because people see me and they say, oh, you know, I'm also a visible minority. And if she's there in a co-founder position on the board of a team that is blowing up, maybe I can do that too. I'm mm-hmm. in finance. Maybe I can be the CFO of a professional women's sports team one day and combine my love of sports and my love of business, you know, and make a job out of it.
Yeah.
Oftentimes we feel like you can't do both.
The narratives that we tell each other or that we have been told of what people can and can't do or what they can't participate in and can't participate in.
Absolutely right. And now you can. You can have a meaningful job. You know, you can make the women's professional sports teams progress over time and enjoy what you're doing and make a living out of it.
Yes, yeah. These things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Exactly right.
Yeah. As someone that is like, you know, has kids that are, you know, that play sports, like how cool is it for your kids to know that their mom is like an investor in a professional sports team?
It's pretty cool.
Do they understand like the kind of magnitude, the gravity, or like what's their, how do they kind of process it?
They do. And I think, you know, it's like, it allows them to also think that they can do anything, they mm-hmm. can achieve. My daughter plays volleyball, not soccer, but it's she sees that there is now a pathway for her friends who are really deep into playing sports at a high level, playing soccer at a high level, that they can to pursue a professional mm-hmm. career in soccer if they choose.
Those doors have opened.
And that's really cool. Yeah. You know, that's neat for her to see. And you know, part of the rally cry for AFC Toronto is that we're doing this for our daughter's daughter. You know, and I would also add for our daughters and our sons' sons. Mm-hmm. You know, that little boys, you know, and young men see that they will have daughters potentially one day and that they too can play professionally.
Yeah.
So it's for everyone. It's not just for girls and women. It's for all genders to see that this is possible.
Yeah.
And that this is common. You know, this is now normalized.
I think the other thing too is that like when you talk about like the dream and the storytelling and the access and inclusivity of the storytelling, you know, a lot of people love sport and sports and are such big fans of the culture, but are also like not elite athletes. And the storytelling around being able to contribute in other ways beyond being a star athlete on the field, there's so many more doors that are open and so many more examples of how people can pursue viable, successful career paths in the world of sport that without having to be an elite athlete, you know?
100%. You know, this conversation is like making me think about maybe doing like a day in the life of a team. Mm-hmm. There's the caterers. There is the stadium. There are the sponsorships.
So many layers. Yeah.
So many. They're cleats. You know, there's just so much to this sport. And it starts with a ball.
Yep.
The humble ball.
Exactly. And that is the universal kind of equalizer too.
100%. Because all you really need to play soccer is a ball.
Yeah.
You know, it's that is the whole meaning behind it being the beautiful game.
Obviously, a big part of the dialogue and the conversation too is around funding and like financial support. Women's sports have often been underfunded, but have over-delivered, like very much, you know, punched above their weight. What kind of opportunity exists in that gap for fans, for brands, for investors, in terms of the actual financial opportunities that can help cultivate the space further?
Yes. So as we were launching, we needed to raise funds. And we reached out into our networks. And a lot of our investors who are with us today were so supportive of the mission that they wanted to be a part of it. So, you know, I would say early days, the investors were like friendly investors, you know, that really wanted to see this thing launch mm-hmm. and contributed to the cause because of the mission. In round three, I would say, we looked to open up the investment to a larger tranche just because there are so many financial needs. Mm-hmm. And we found a terrific investor in Mark Mitchell, and he is from Detroit. Mm-hmm. And he runs his Mitchell family office now.
Yep.
And he, from day one, was so supportive of the mission, the vision, and what we're trying to do here. He got it right away. And to this day, he comes to almost every game, you know, and he wants to know what we need, you know, and how he can help. It's people like Mark Mitchell and his team that really have propped up the, I think, the messaging around our team, which is we are here to break barriers, you know, and to make sure that this continues, that we are on a path to expansion. So I think the next round of expansion will be the next opportunity for investors if they want to jump in. I will say, I think, you know, in the meantime, part of the support comes from our fan base, our support group. So we were talking about merch. That's another way in which we can support the club, is if you rep the merch. And, you know, to me, that's an investment of not just funds, but time.
Yeah.
And effort, and really, you know, talking about the team. We can't do this without our supporters.
Yeah.
This is the whole reason why we do this. You know, and it's not just at the match. It's everything in between. Sponsors play a huge role, too. We couldn't do this without our supporters, too.
Yeah.
So like I mentioned, Desjardins, we have Canadian Tire, you know, at the league level, Sport Check. These are companies that have also been with us since day one, and they are critical to our success. Yeah.
What I find so interesting, too, about the merch side as well is that, you know, it's clothing at the end of the day, but I think what is so interesting is that it plays such a huge part in, like, the cultural conversation and, like, the overall, like, zeitgeist and, like, the visibility and awareness. I ended up wearing, like, I have a jacket that has, like, a Toronto Tempo logo on it. And I have to say, what was really, really interesting for me in my experience wearing that jacket was, one, like, the women that were like, oh, my God, that's so amazing that to see that, you know, people are repping the brand. But it was actually more, what I thought was more interesting and what I had more experiences of were the men that were coming up and like, that's amazing. And like, where do I get this? And how can I support too? Like, I thought that was actually really great to see that it wasn't just, it's just people that are fans of sport and not necessarily just like a gendered thing too. Obviously, people want to support women's teams, but it's also just like people are excited to just support another team and other leagues and things that are coming up. And there is that excitement around it.
100%. I love that. And I think, you know, it's a conversation starter. I was walking down the street, down Yonge Street one weekend, and I was wearing AFC Toronto. And a man said, oh, I love your shirt. I thought, you know what? That is insane. That's amazing that we're being recognized, you know, as a team that has a foundation now and a supporter base. And, you know, it's engaging.
Yeah.
You look at someone, you say, oh, I love your jersey. Then you know right away that you are of the same. You know, you're in that same community.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of, you're aligned in so many ways. Mm-hmm. So the merch is, not just threads. It's actually, there's so much meaning and impact behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just find it such a fascinating part of the conversation, and that just wearing that jacket was just like a really unintentional social experiment that I was like, this is so interesting, just the feedback that I'm getting just off of wearing just a jacket. And like, the look was not like big or anything, so it was just really cool to see, and that goes a long way, you know, even though it's just a hoodie or a jacket or something, right?
For sure. And I will call out, this logo was created by Erica Flores, a local Latina, who was thrilled to work with us on creating a logo that represented Toronto, you know, a jersey with, there's so much I can, you can go onto AFC Toronto and look at our Toronto away jersey. But there's so much meaning behind it. You know, every piece of this jersey has a meaning, and I think the city will feel represented in what they see.
Yeah, absolutely. On the note of fans, like, how do you, in your experience with the team and the players, how do you build fan culture when there hasn't necessarily been like a deep legacy yet, and not necessarily like, you know, these alliances and the loyalty that you typically see with kind of like the more established teams, I guess. Mm-hmm. And how are you turning your first-time fans into long-time loyal supporters?
Mm-hmm. So our fan base, I think, you know, like we started, is very grassroots. It comes from a lot of the youth clubs in the Greater Toronto Area, and it also comes from people who know these players and really engage with the players. If you go on any of our socials, there's a lot of storytelling going on with not just the play on the pitch. Actually, I think it's even more so the way they are, their personalities, their charisma off the pitch. They have such personalities, and it's really engaging to watch them in just their day-to-day and the where they're going in the city, you know, how they're interacting with each other, as well as their training and the gameplay. There's a lot of engagement that happens on social media, but also at the matches. So I think with every match under our belt, we're building that supporter base that is growing more and more. I want to give a shout out to Vermilion Vanguard, who is our supporter group. They have been insane. Like, they've been coming out to each game and giving it their all. They make these incredible banners. And I was just talking to Claudio, who's part of the group's team. They are buying more flags, you know, and having more people come out every match. They are helping us in a tremendous way build the supporter base. So it's really about engagement. And, you know, it's the head, the heart, and the hands. And I think with the heart, we're really tapping into, I think, a lot of pent-up need and desire for professional women's sports in Toronto. And again, I think that's with hockey, I think that's with soccer and with basketball, and who knows what's next.
Yeah.
But we're here for all of that, not just the soccer play. It's really beautiful to see the city rallying around these teams, these women, these professionals who come and play and give it their all and who are making careers out of this.
Yeah. What's like one something small or nuanced or subtle that you think has become or will become like a signature AFC Toronto thing, whether that's like a chant or a color or a logo or something that people will be like, yeah, that is a thing that like connects us all together, you know, that from a community standpoint.
Mm-hmm. So at every match there is the Vermilion Vanguard, they're doing a lot of chants. Tribal Rhythm Nation has come out and been the sort of the background sound to our games. I think there's a lot of momentum that we're building at these matches. I'm not sure that there's any one thing. I think it's a lot of times the images on social media where you see young girls, you know, holding up banners for their favorite players or coming and chanting their names, you know, and getting their signatures. Our athletes take the time at the end of every match to go to the stands and say hello and sign scarves or sign posters that the young girls and boys have made for the players. That's been a signature, you know, and even in defeats, they will come and recognize the supporters who have come out to watch them play.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's it, is that there's so much engagement, even after the whistle's blown, to ensure that our supporters are recognized, you know, that we're grateful for them to have come to watch and have this experience with us. It's in these moments that are really special and meaningful. And it's not any one moment. It's like just a continuous momentum, you said the word groundswell.
I think
there's just such a positive impact, you know, that these matches bring these communities together. And for an hour and a half, for 90 minutes, we are all so focused on the unifying sport of soccer and being together. That's really been the magic of it all.
Yeah. And we talk about groundswell and grassroots. For anyone who's listening that's like, you know, very inspired by your journey and sees themselves in your story, what's one kind of like practical step that they can take to get involved in women's sports as an owner, investor, or a supporter?
I would say follow AFC Toronto on socials. We're on all the socials now. I would say also engage with the players, with the front office, with the volunteers that are at every match. I'll say one story. Early days when we were very new, you know, people were connecting with us on LinkedIn, a really great way to be connected with AFC Toronto, as well as anyone on the team. I think people are pretty receptive to linking in. Someone had reached out to me, you know, in early days, I was really good about getting back to everybody. It's getting harder. But I engaged with someone, her name is Jamie Lynn, and she was so enthusiastic and really, felt inspired by the work we were doing. Anyway, we kept in touch. She was, working with the Marlies at the time. Long story short, we had a number of conversations. We had a need for someone in ticket sales, and now she works with us full time. So it is very possible to engage with someone on the team. We're all pretty open and willing to have conversations, you know, with people that want to know more about the team and how to get involved, whether that's in an employment capacity or in a volunteer capacity or as an investor. That's what it's about, you know, is engagement and making those connections. We have so many tools at our disposal now, with LinkedIn as a primary one for me, Instagram, TikTok, and, you know, seeing people and comment on the reels that we're putting out, that's encouraging too, and feedback.
Yeah.
You know, any positive, any constructive, like, we're open to that. We're still new at this and learning every day. Mm-hmm. So the more, you know, feedback we get, and people wanting and willing to help, I think that's part of it, is getting engaged, coming out, supporting, and having those conversations. It's been really meaningful for us too, you know, on our end, to have those conversations and know that we're having an impact and making a difference.
Yeah, yeah. Last question here. What does success personally look like for you in this chapter as a leader, an owner, a builder, and how has that changed since like day one, if anything?
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like we're on a really good streak here. You know, we have worked really hard to deliver a great experience, a game day experience. So in that sense, you know, success is ongoing and continuous. You know, we're absolutely learning every day. It's not perfect, but it's all about continuous improvement, Kaizen, you know, getting better and better every day. To me, the success for me personally is seeing girls and young women come to these matches and feeling inspired and hearing about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's visual. I can see it. People tell me about it. I've gotten emails from parents who say, thank you so much for putting this together. My girls are so inspired and they're so excited about each match, and they love to come and watch and see themselves in these role models that are doing it for themselves on the pitch. So that to me, like, we're getting there. You know, like, it's one by one. It's one child by one child, just knowing that we're having that impact and that it's changing the perspective, you know, and the dreams of kids, and having them see a future in whatever they want to do, whatever discipline. It doesn't have to be soccer. It can be business. It can be medicine, science. You know, this, like, literally the sky's the limit. And that is the messaging, is we are just doing something that we're passionate about and we went after it, and we're here now. You too can pursue your dreams, whatever that may look like, in whatever domain that is. This is just one example of, you know, the next generation really feeling inspired and challenged to, you know, take it on and figure out the next steps on how to get there.
Yeah. What a great way to end the episode with. Thank you so much for your time and just this, your story. And yeah, it's just really great to hear, and just interesting to be able to learn more about your story.
Thanks so much, Lance, for inviting me and giving us this platform to also promote our team and our league. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Brenda.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.